You know things are busy at the Hoffman House when there's a little note on the dining room table at your spot that says, "Dad, I'm doing the chancel chat this week. What is your sermon going to be on?" And that also, the little story that Alyssa told about stepping out of the box reminds me of a birthday card that I got Lynn. We have a cat who sometimes steps out of his box. So I need your participation. I want to see by a show of hands, how many of you do some things on autopilot? You just automatically, you can look at all these hands, wow. Okay, I want to tell you a little story. Lynn and I drove to Chicago a few weeks back. Actually, I drove and Lynn was doing some knitting. And it just amazes me that she can knit and not miss, what would you call that, Lynn? A stitch, okay. Not miss a stitch and keep up a full conversation with me. She was preparing some things for yesterday's craft show here at church. Likewise, our son, as many young adults can do, can text a message to somebody and keep a full conversation going with somebody else. It amazes me. I mean, I can't, you know, when I try to text, half the words are spelled wrong. You know, it's crazy. And our daughter, she is able to prepare flowers, to strip the leaves off and to clip them at the right length when she's working at English Gardens in the florist section, and can keep up a full conversation with somebody. Come to think of it, I can do something on autopilot. I can walk, or I can go out running in the morning. Now, usually I don't have a conversation going with myself. Usually I try to use that as my prayer time and pray to God. So today we are talking about the third appearance, actually the fourth, if you count the women who met Jesus right after he was resurrected. But according to what we read, the third appearance, it talks about Peter. Now, I had to do a lot of research on this because it amazes me when we read things in the Bible. And, you know, I just didn't understand this. It said Peter was naked. I'm thinking, like, why was he naked doing fishing? I mean, that just seems so strange. Well, after looking through a few commentaries, I did find out that Peter was probably partially dressed. He probably took off maybe his outer garment so that he could really get into fishing. And this kind of reminded me of when I took a group of the Indian students to Camp Dearborn last summer. It is considered very appropriate when men go with men in the water to simply wear a bathing suit. But whenever an Indian woman is around, they will also wear a t-shirt. So I started thinking, maybe with Peter, you know, he took his shirt off or outer garment to do this fishing. And then when he saw that it was Jesus, thought it would be more appropriate to get more covered up. So I'm sure that he wasn't completely naked. Now, the disciples were very experienced fishermen. And I know we have a experienced fishermen here, and probably Keith, if he's in the back, Mark and Keith. Mark, I'm going to ask you a question. When is a good time to go out fishing? Good one, good one. So, Mark, would it be better to go out when it's kind of overcast or darker, as opposed to during the bright daytime?
Right now would be really good.
Right now would be good, except for the snow. So, even though these disciples were experienced fishermen and could go out and actually fish on autopilot, not even have to think about it, because they had spent their whole lives doing this. They unfortunately caught nothing. Now, I'm sure all of us have had times where We've spent our resources, our time, our talents, and treasures around the house trying to do something, and it just didn't come out the way we wanted it to. Or maybe at work, you had planned something, and it just didn't work the way you wanted it to. Or maybe at school, maybe even in ministries here at church or outside of church, where we have spent a lot of time, we catch nothing, much like the disciples. Now, last night at Converge, when we were talking with Mrs. Vang, and she was explaining to us how a Christian leader and an entrepreneur would act, the one thing that I brought up, that I no longer use the word failure in my conversations. I use the word instead, experiment. When you think of Thomas Edison, I think Thomas Edison tried something like nearly 1,000 different items for the filament in his first light bulb. He never called them failures. He simply said they were experiments. By experimenting, he knew what not to use. Now, there is one time in my speech where I will use the word failure, and that would be when I would do nothing to change a situation. I consider that a failure. Or where I would do something just the way I did it before and expect different results. I think that's also a definition of insanity, where you do the same thing and you expect different results. Well, I'd like to tell you guys a little story about Dubuque Seminary. I think I have talked before in sermons that I am pursuing another master's degree at Dubuque Seminary in Iowa. And this one is in mission and discipleship. And I'm really excited about the things that I'm learning. Now, most of the classes I can take online, but twice a year, I need to show up in person on campus. So that's usually in August and then usually in January. This past August, I took a class and it had a four-day excursion in which we could choose to either go out into a rural area with the group, or we could go to more of an urban area. And this class was called The Gospel in Context. Unfortunately, I wanted to do the urban area because I feel, you know, I mean, we live in a suburb, we live near Detroit, I just felt more comfortable. Unfortunately, by the time I signed up for the class, the urban section was completely filled, so I had to do the rural. Now, actually, what I found out was that by doing the rural was really beneficial for me having a small ministry of international students. It matched up really well. But I want to tell you that our professor, who was also a Presbyterian minister in Iowa of a fairly large church, he had done a lot of work in small churches, in rural churches. And he was trying to prepare our group not to be so anxious, because we found out after coming on campus that we would be staying 2 days with one family and 2 days with another. But we didn't know anything about the families, we didn't know their names or anything. So the professor could see that people in the class were getting kind of anxious. So he tried to calm us down by appealing to our sense of taste. And he said, I will tell you this, that when you go to a rural area, the folks, the first thing they do is bring out, you know, a piece of pie or ice cream or something, so you'll be having all these great treats. And we had one girl in class that was highly offended by that. She said, you know, I want to be able to pick and choose if I want something to eat. If I've just had a meal, I don't want, you know. And so this instructor kept trying to calm her down. He said, you know, there is one woman in one of the towns that we're going to that makes her own donuts, and these are the best donuts. So up here, I have a donut, a symbol for a donut at least, and this is to help you remember. So anyway, he kept trying to calm this gal down, and she seemed to be the only one in class that was upset about having to eat. So finally, he went up to her and stood over. She sat about in the middle of class and stood over the desk and said, "Just eat the darn donut." But he didn't use the word darn. I kind of cleaned it up. So that became our rally cry for my van, the van that I was in. Every time we'd go to a gas station and somebody'd bring out a snack and want to share it with the group, if anybody refused, we'd just say, "Just eat the darn donut." Now, the reason he said this was because he knew we had to build up a relationship with the people that we were staying with. Two sets of families, and it was very important that we'd have a good, strong relationship with them so that they would share their thoughts and ideas as we could share with them. So that was all about relationship. I have another story to tell you. And this is about when Jared played soccer. I was the coach of his soccer team for many, many years. And we had moved from recreational to what's the next step after recreation?
Travel,
it could be, what is it? Select, thank you, select. And then finally, my team got so good, and it wasn't because of me, I can tell you that. But they moved to Premier. Now, at the time, I was going to seminary to become a lay pastor. And when you move into Premier, the coach has to take two additional classes. And I just could not fit these in. So one of the members of our soccer board in the Dearborn Soccer League was a crusty old Irishman. His name was Tom. And Tom had not coached for a number of years. The last time he coached was when his sons played, and his sons were in their 30s. So I approached Tom one day at a meeting, a soccer club meeting, and I said, "Tom, would you consider being the head coach? I will step down. I will be the assistant coach and work with my boys because I would like to have them move into the Premier League." And Tom said, "I don't know, I'm kind of done with that. You know, I like what I'm doing, the administrative part of it, but I don't know if I really want to coach." And so I kind of pleaded with him, and he said, "Well, I'll tell you what, I will come and work with your boys one day, and I'll see how it goes." So he came out, and at the end of the practice, I could tell he fell in love with my kids. And I was just so happy, and he said, "Sure, I will be the head coach." And he said, "I've been looking over the team, and I'm happy with the way you have the defense set up." And those would be the defensive players would be the ones right before our net where our goalie was defending. And he said, "I also like the midfield, the way you have that set up." But he goes, "Your forwards, you know, all they do is play with the ball, and they get the ball stolen all the time." And so Tom's words of wisdom to our forwards was, "Kick it in." But he also used the D word in there, too. Kick it in. And so that's why I have the soccer ball up here. And so we were playing one of our final games, and the score was 0-0. And our son, Jared, happened to be one of the defensemen on the team. And the way we worked our strategy out was the defensemen, if a ball came to them, they would dribble it up the side and shoot it to a midfielder. A midfielder would take it about at the 30-yard line, our 30-yard line, and dribble it up to maybe the opposing team's 30-yard line. Then shoot it to a forward, and the forward would hopefully take the shot. Well, this happened to be a very important game because it was our last game of the season. I knew if we lost the game, we would come in second place. If we tied the game, we would be tied with the team that we were playing for first place. But if we won the game, we would be in first place. So we were playing at a football field that happened to have a scoreboard and, you know, with the lights, and it told how much time was left. And there were about 15 seconds left in the game, and the ball came to our son, Jared. So Jared dribbled the ball up to the 30-yard line, and I'm thinking, there's no way it's going to get to a midfielder and a forward. And Jared got about up to the 30-yard line and just whacked the ball. And to give you an idea of how far it would have to go, it would go beyond the sanctuary, beyond the narthex, beyond the patio, and out into our parking lot. It had to go about 70 feet. And so it was kind of like, you know, you see in the movies sometime where everybody just freezes, you know, the airplanes freeze in the air, the birds freeze, and all you can see is this ball just arching over. And this ball bounced right in front of their goalie, over his head and right into the net. So I was so proud of my boy, a defenseman, yeah, a defenseman who scored. That was pretty cool. So the reason I tell you that story is that there are times where we have to take the shot. We need to listen to those that we're serving and those around us and take that shot. In today's reading, there was a part that Jesus told the disciples to cast your nets to the right side of the boat. And what Jesus meant by that, and that's why I have this fishing net up over on the other side, is that there are times where we have to do things that are really radically different, but knowing that we have the power of the resurrected Lord on our side, we can do those. And Jesus, when he asked the disciples to cast the net over the right side, it was already daytime, okay? It was not good fishing time. And they did it because they believed so strongly in him overcoming death. Now, as Christians nowadays, we still have that resurrection power of Jesus Christ to do some pretty amazing things. We have to be aware of listening to the words of Jesus when he tells us to throw our nets over the right side of the boat. If we are listening to and living in relationship with our risen Lord and Savior, we can do anything. Now, I'm going to ask that you keep Pastor Chris and our session in prayer. I know the other day I had breakfast with Brian, and he was telling me that the session had a retreat that they went to. And they did this because they are trying to discern what God is saying to our church, what we should be doing. And they're going to have another retreat, I think the end of January, about the end of January, Brian just nodded. So keep them in prayer. Also, keep our congregation in prayer because we may be asked to eat the darn donut. We may be asked to do some things that are out of our comfort zone. We need to remember to encourage each other and to take the shot, just like Tom, our coach, would say, take the shot. So we need to close the door on the parts of our lives that are not working here at First Presbyterian Church. But we can't change that timeless message, the gospel message. That must stay the same. But our methodology, maybe throwing our nets over the right side of the boat during the daytime, is something we have to consider. We need to show that our actions reflect our words, okay? That's integrity. And I think the time is ripe The time is ripe right now for us to develop relationships, listen to those around us, those that we are called to serve, and to be ready to do something radically different. Amen.